All right, let's go ahead and get started then. We're studying the book of Revelation. We've been in it for five different classes and everything, and that's not bad considering we're in chapter 6. Now, we did skip chapters 2 and 3. So let's begin this by let me ask you four things about the book of Revelation. Have you learned anything?
Yes.
Number one, it is what?
A revelation.
It's a revelation. How do you know that? That's what it says, right? I mean, you look Revelation chapter 1, verse 1, what does that tell you? Well, it says there are 65 books in the Bible that anybody can understand, but there's one book you cannot understand. And what's the name of that book? Revelation. The Lord says, this is, and you can define words by using the word. My sixth grade English teacher was wrong. I figured it out. You know, a revelation means to reveal. I think, you know, how can you define revelation any better than that? If you know, and it is. It's a revelation. It's revelation to whom? To those seven churches in Asia. How do you know that? That's what chapter 1, verse 1 says. Write it in a book, and verse 11 tells us the name of those seven churches. And the names of those seven churches, can you do them? Do you know the names of those seven churches? Wait a minute. Let's use ESP. You getting anything?
Yes.
E is who?
Ephesus.
S is? Smyrna. P is? Pergamos. All right. You ready for TSP? Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, and you already knew the last one. And it's a revelation of those seven churches in Asia. It's a revelation to seven churches in Asia in what?
Signs.
In signs. Did I make that up? No, that is exactly what the text says. On the screen, I've rehyphenated the word to emphasize what the Greek word says. It's the word for sign. He sent and signified it. It is not a literal, book. It's not a historical book. People read it like they're reading the life of Jesus or something like that. It's set in history, but it is in symbols. Yes, Henry? I need to talk louder. One of my batteries down in my hearing aids.
Okay. Talk so you can hear me. I want to ask a question on the kind of this revelation is to the seven churches. Well, what it mean to us today?
Great, great question. It means to us, and in the application, we take and use it exactly like we do the rest of the Bible. You read about the parables of Jesus. What do they mean to us? You know, they had an application to those people in that day. What does it mean to us? And so you learn the lessons of it. Maybe the Old Testament, whatsoever things were written aforetime. You can quote that verse. We were written for our learning that we, through patience and comfort of the Scriptures, might have hope. You know, these things happen unto them for examples, and they're written for our admonition. And so here's a book that's written to encourage us. Now, we're not enduring what they are enduring, but we are involved in what they... There's the application of that. A revelation to seven churches in Asia in signs of what? Of things which must shortly happen. I did not make that up, folks. That is what the text says. And any approach to this book that ignores that is a wrong approach. I wish we could spend more time on that, but we spent 2 weeks on it, did we not? Trying to emphasize that. It was written, chapter 1, verse 9, during the tribulation. And that's the key to helping us understand the book. That's not what I'm saying. John says, I am your brother in the kingdom. And we use that verse to show the kingdom existed. And I am your brother in the tribulation. The article is there in the Greek. Not just, we're suffering things together. We're having tribulation together. That's not what he's saying. I am your brother in the tribulation. And Matthew 24 says, there's only one of those. In fact, when we get to chapter 7, verse 9, it is described as the great tribulation. So it's a revelation to seven churches in Asia in signs of things which must shortly happen. Now, what's the book all about? Chapter 1. Don't look inside your head. You've been sitting in this class for 5 weeks. What happens in this book? Where is John? John's on the Isle of Patmos, and he sees Jesus. Now, you remember what Jesus looked like? What about his hair? White like snow, like wool. What about his eyes? Flames of fire. What about the clothing he was wearing? The garment goes all the way to his feet. Wait a minute, get to his feet. What does his feet look like?
Brass.
Polished brass. And he's got a sash around him. And what's it made of? You remember what that's made of? That we haven't emphasized that. A golden sash. Now, in my mind, this is not in the text, I want you to understand, but I remember things in a weird way. Tucked up under that girdle that he's got, that sash, is a set of keys. Because in chapter 1, he says, I have the keys to what? Death and Hades. What does this mean to us? Here's a great illustration of it. You know, Jesus has the keys to death and to that unseen world, and we ought to be thankful for that. And so those keys are not there, but he has something in his hand, does he not? He has some stars in his hand, and he's walking, standing in the midst of those seven churches. What on earth are those seven churches are? What are those? They're the seven, seven candlesticks. And what are those seven candlesticks? They are the seven churches. And so the Lord is in the midst of them. Now, we've not studied chapters 2 and 3. We're going to do that in Sunday night sermons, and in weeks when I'm away, others are going to be teaching this class. But it is the letters to the seven churches. And that's ESP, TSPL, if you want to learn that. A good way to try to remember those names of those seven churches. And so he writes a personal letter to every one of those churches. When you get to chapter 4... If I tell you chapter 5, can you tell me chapter 4? Let's do it that way. Last couple of weeks, I've been telling you chapter 4, and you were telling me chapter 5. Chapter 5 is, believe also in me. What's chapter 4?
You believe in God.
You believe in God. Thank you. Somebody's learning it. I am so encouraged, okay? That is, Ophelia, that is so great. I am so encouraged, okay? You believe in God. He sees Jesus, sees God on the throne. And chapter 5, you see Jesus, the Lamb of God. Sitting on the throne, we're not going to spend a lot of time there, but sitting on the throne is one, and he has in his right hand, chapter 5, verse 1, a scroll. And that scroll is sealed up. That is really significant. Because when you get to the end of the book of Daniel, the book of Daniel is sealed up, or is unsealed, and God tells Daniel, you seal that book up. It doesn't concern you. It concerns something 600 years from now. It doesn't concern you, Daniel. Now then, in the book of Revelation, you've got a book that is sealed. And when it is open, guess what? What's going to happen? Things that shortly come to pass. They're symbolically represented, and so that's where we are in relationship to this. And only Jesus is able to open the books because only Jesus knows the futures. All right, chapter 6. Think hard, wait a minute. Chapter 6. Wonder what could be in chapter 6. Wonder what could be in chapter 6. Is that a clue? Ophelia, you haven't got that one yet, have you? What's in chapter 6? The six seals. The first six seals are in chapter 6. And this is not on the final test, but it'll sure help you to navigate this book. You know, when you're trying to find something, I know it's somewhere in the book of Revelation. Well, maybe these keys will help you. John sees Jesus on the Isle of Patmos, letters to the seven churches. You believe in God, believe also in me. And chapter 6, the sixth seal. Now, last week we spent a lot of time talking about that sixth seal, and so let's look at that sixth seal and think about it. Whenever that seal is open, because you see, only God knows the future, and Jesus is deity, so Jesus is able to tell you what's going to happen. He sees a white horse, and the rider on the white horse has a bow. A crown is given to him, and he goes forth conquering and to conquer. If you're a member of the seven churches in Asia, remember this book was written to them, they could be able to figure this out. They would have an advantage that you and I do not have, and that is they understood this word, he goes forth conquering and to conquer, because 8 times already in this book, this word conquering has been used. Every other time, it is translated overcome. to him that overcometh, to every one of the seven churches, and twice to one of those seven churches, to him that overcomes, to him that overcomes, to him that overcomes, even as I have overcome, Jesus says. And so eight times we've already had this word overcoming. Now then, we see the rider on the white horse riding out overcoming and to overcome. I think it is really unfortunate. It's unfortunate in the fact that that whenever there's a Greek word, it certainly helps it if you translate it consistently. I mean, you get this. Well, now, who is the rider on the white horse? At this point, you decide what you're going to do with the book of Revelation. You're going to decide right now, how do you interpret the book of Revelation? Now, you're not allowed with any certainty to be subjective about it. Well, I think it means wonderful. I'm glad you're thinking, but I'm more concerned about what God says, you know. And there's a whole lot of things in this book that I could say, well, let me tell you what I think this means. I do my utmost not to tell you what I think this means. But I know who the rider on the white horse is. You remember Jesus on the Isle of Patmos? What about his mouth? Remember anything unusual? We talked about his eyes and his hair and his garment and his feet. What about his mouth? A sword coming out of his mouth. In chapter 19, there is a rider on a white horse. Now get it? Chapter 6, he goes out trying to conquer. The rider on the white horse. Chapter 19, the rider on the white horse is victorious and he has overcome them, listen to this, by the sword that comes out of his mouth. There are four enemies, and we've not even talked about these four enemies. We'll be on the final test when I test you. See, and Ophelia, you're doing real good. You're going to be the A-plus student. I've got it all figured out, okay? But there are four enemies in the book. So between chapter 6 and chapters 19, we got four enemies. You've got the dragon, you've got the beast of the sea, you've got the beast of the land, also called the false prophet, and you've got the dragon, the devil. And that's what's in chapter 6 through 13. So he's going to confront them. He goes out conquering and overcome. And there are these four enemies. We haven't looked at any of those. That's where we're headed. Guess what? Get to chapter 19. He has overcome. You know, the devil has been overcome. The beast of the sea. And the woman, I should have put the woman as one of the enemies, beast of the sea, beast of the land, and then the woman, and then the devil. And we get to chapter 19. Every one of them is defeated. You have to get into chapter 20 to find out the devil's not fully defeated but he is bound for 1,000 years. And the point we made in that is we win. I mean, that's what this book is all about. You're in those seven churches in Asia, and God is trying to give you a message. Why did he put it in code? You ever think about that? Well, I don't know. That's the best answer I can give. Can I give you a perhaps? How dangerous would it have been for any Christian or any church assembly to have a book that prophesied the overthrow of the Roman government? How dangerous would that have been? I'll guarantee you this. When the Romans read the book of Revelation, they were really in bad shape. Now, they were a little bit better off than you are because they didn't have televangelists to mess their minds up. But you need to understand that they couldn't figure it out. And so we're going to let God determine what these... If God doesn't make something of that symbol, why should we? And we need to be content to stop where the Bible stops. I mean, I've got some judgment about the white hair and why his hair was white. I've got some real judgment about it. Makes a lot of sense. It's one of those I think, though. But when you see somebody with white hair other than an older preacher you know at Palm Beach Lakes, what do you think of? You think of wisdom. You think of this preacher, you think his brain's in there crooked. It's wisdom. But there may be symbolism. The fire in his eyes, what does that symbolize? Well, tell you what I think it means. Go ahead. When you get to, after you've said it, you've told me what you think it means. It is not significant unless the Bible gives significance to it, you see. And the very fact he was given a crown, by the way, shows he didn't have a crown, originally, and he's only crowned. And in chapter 19, guess what he's got? He's got every crown there is. He is crowned with many crowns, but he goes out, you know, King of Kings, Lord of Lords, but didn't have their crowns. But by the time you get to the end of Revelation 19, he's got the many crowns. He's taken the crowns away from them. So he goes forth conquering and to conquer. And so you've got to deal with how you're going to interpret it. Let me see if I can illustrate this. We have not looked at Revelation chapter 2, the church at Smyrna. You will have tribulation 10 days. Is that literal or figurative? If you'd been a member of the church at Smyrna, how many days would it have taken you to figure out if that's literal or figurative? Isn't that amazing? They would have known on the 11th day. Dan, do you know which one it is? Nope. Do I need to know? Nope. If I'd been needing to know, God would have given me some end. Well, what's the significance of 10? I'll tell you what I think it is. Okay, go right ahead. Whenever you finish, it's what you think it is. You know, does the Bible give a significance to the number 10? Those 24 elders, remember those? Why 24? Well, that's 2 times 12. And so people want to find 2 groups of 12 in the book of Revelation. That's what folks think it means. But you recognize that 2 times 12 is 24, so is 3 times 8, and 4 times 6, and 6 times 4, and 8 times 3, and 12 times 2. I have as much right to say there are 12 symbols of 2 in the Bible, or 8 symbols of 3, and that's who the 24 elders are. Guess what? There were 24 elders. What's significant about that? Whenever you believe in God and you believe also in me, those elders take those crowns that they have and they take them off their head and they lay them before Jesus. Is that significant? You'd better believe it is. And we better get our own crown of self-righteousness and arrogance and everything, and get it off our head and lay it before the throne of Jesus. Now then, he goes forth conquering and to conquer. And now then, what happens? We're ready to start today's class. The second seal is open, and when the second seal is open, he sees a red horse. Remember when I've taught this in schools of preaching, on the final test, that's why I keep mentioning it. I don't ask you what's the significance of the horse being fiery red. You don't know that necessarily. You may have some good ideas, and the Bible may give it some reference. There were those fiery serpents in the Old Testament. Yeah, I understand that. I don't know if fiery serpents in the Old Testament have anything to do with the fiery eyes of Jesus. It seems like that's a bit of a jump and a stretch. But it may have that significance. But you've got to know what the text says. Why? Because if I am wrong in the application of this book, you will not be misled by knowing what's in the text. And you will be in a position to understand, well, Dan really missed this when he taught that class. And I recognize the possibility of that. But a fiery red horse comes out. If I ask you the significance of red, what would you think it might be?
In Asia, it was big.
Danger, bloodshed. What is red? What does red say? It depends on whether you're a communist or not. It depends on whether you're a Muslim or not. You've got that red, that red half moon and the sickle on the Muslim flag. Is that the communist flag? You understand? Is it good or bad? It may be neither, but I know what happens when the rider on the red horse rides out. That rider on the red horse is given authority to take peace from the earth. What's this book all about? It is about things that are going to shortly happen. What's going to shortly happen? He's going to go forth riding on the white horse, trying to conquer, to overcome, and to overcome. And what does he meet with? He meets with death. In fact, power is given to the rider on that white horse that he might take the lives of individuals. Now, watch this very, very carefully. A great sword is given to the rider. That sword is significant in the Greek language. We're about to read another sword in two or three verses later, but there are two words used in the Bible to use sword, to refer to the word sword. This word is the word used to refer to martyrdom. Not just a regular sword, not just a hand sword, that type of thing, but it is the sword that was used to talk about martyrdom. You're in the seven churches in Asia. What are you living with? You've been commissioned by Christ to go out and to teach the gospel of the whole world. What's happened? We're getting killed. Where's God? Well, God permits it. Authority is given. And He is given the sword, a great sword. It is the sword of martyrdom. If you are a Greek in one of those seven churches in Asia, you know, he's not just given, they're not given a switchblade. He's not just given a pocket knife. You know, he's given a sword. What's that word mean? It's the sword of martyrdom. What's happened to those seven churches? They're out trying to conquer, and lo and behold, we're getting killed. And we are being martyred. This is a book of things that were going to happen. Write the things which are, and are things which you have seen, things which are, and the things which you will see. And they see it every bit. They could identify with Jesus going forth riding on that white horse. And they are definitely attended to that. In the book of Luke, Luke says it this way. Luke says, God has given me the kingdom, and I am giving the kingdom to you. That is an amazing concept of our responsibility. How's he going to conquer the world? Go into all the world and preach the gospel, which is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believes it, and we become a part of those going forth conquering and to conquer. But it's hard. Yep, it's a lot harder for them than it was for us. How many apostles were there that were not martyred? Have you ever thought about that? You know, who's the one apostle that was not martyred? Are you aware of the fact? By the time this book is written, whatever date you put to it, by the time this book is written, every one of the apostles is dead. You talk about an absence of leadership in the church and frustration and everything. I mean, you just imagine, what if all of our elders were killed in a plane crash and two of the three preachers were killed. And you had to deal with this weird guy standing up here. Think about how weird that would be and how tragic that would be. Why? No leadership. The church is built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets. And they're dead. They're dead. Go out. You're facing martyrdom. And so he says, there's a third seal. Yes. And he opens the third seal. Is that second seal hard to deal with? No. What does it say? Saw the rider on the red horse, and he was given power to kill people, and people were killing each other. The rider, was given the sword of martyrdom. So now then, the third seal is happening. I'm going to show you seven churches in Asia, what's about to happen. And there he sees a black horse. And if I were to ask you the significance of black, isn't that amazing? When I say the significance of black, we think racially. Isn't that amazing? In this day and age, we think racially. First thing that comes to our mind is blacks and whites. You understand me? We're programmed to do this. I sort of doubt this is talking about racial prejudice in America. But that's what televangelists will make of this. You understand what I'm talking about? They'll just kind of think, well, have you ever thought about the significance of black? Yeah. What does black symbolize? What does it symbolize to you? Perhaps it symbolizes gloom and doom, darkness. And I think that'd be true in every culture. Would it not?
Yeah.
And if there is significance to it, but I don't have to know that to figure out what's happened. The rider on the white horse has a balance scale. The Greek indicates not a bathroom scale, but these balance scales. You know what I'm talking about? That the Lady Justice holds and everything. You know, put one thing in one side, something in the other side, and he has a balance scales. And then I heard a voice in the midst of the four living creatures saying, a quart of wheat for a denarius, and three quarts of barley for a denarius, and don't harm the wine and the oil. Wow, isn't that great? I don't have a clue. You know why I don't have a clue? Because I'm not in the seven churches in Asia. How much is a denarius? You know, the Bible will explain it to you. It's translated in the King James by the word penny. Yes?
So it wasn't one of the four creatures saying it. It was a voice in the middle of the four creatures.
What's what?
It wasn't one of the four creatures saying it. It was a voice.
A voice from where the four creatures are. Isn't that what it says? I heard a voice in the midst of the four creatures. You'll tell you what I think. I think it's one of the creatures. Okay? But here's what I know. There are the four creatures. And from out of the middle of them came the voice. And it was the one that had the face of a lion, or it was the one that had the face of an eagle, or the face of a man, or looked like a calf. You know? You understand? Do those things have significance? They might, but not unless the Bible tells. We're not going to be able to figure it out. We can figure out the eagle. Everybody knows the eagle is the bald eagle of America, and it symbolizes America. And so, and that's what folks do. You know, are there qualities that a lion has that would honor God? Yes. What about an eagle? Yes. What about a man? What about a calf? I struggle with trying to make significance. I've tried to, folks. I've really tried to. And I've studied the golden calves. And on every one of these, I've probably got four pages every time the word calf is found in the Bible. I've got the notes. I just don't have time, you know, in the 20 lessons we've got to cover the book of Revelation to look at it. But from the midst of those four living creatures, now then, a quart of wheat for a denarius. Matthew chapter 20. A man had a vineyard and went out early in the morning, and he said, I'll pay you how much if you'll work in my vineyard today. King James it says a penny. You know what the word there is? Denarius. Okay. Work all day and get a quart of wheat. A quart, obviously a quart is an English measure, but it is the equivalent of the measurement in the Greek word. It's as close as you can say it in the English. Got a quart of wheat for one day's wages. And three quarts of barley is for a denarius. The barley was a more coarse grain. You got refined flour. You got icing sugar. You know how good icing sugar is? When they sprinkle all that icing sugar, that is so much better than a sugar cube. You understand what I'm talking about? And so you've got the same thing. But this time it's not just sugar to sugar. It is wheat to barley. And so it was not the preferred grain that they ate. And so you get three quarts of barley for one day's wages. So, what does that mean? How much is a quart of wheat worth? We don't, you know... They would immediately know when they read this. They wouldn't say, well, I wonder what if this is good or bad. You don't know if it's good or bad. Guess what? Normally, you could get 8 quarts of wheat for one day's wages. Sometimes as much as 12 quarts of wheat for one day's wages. So you'd work the first hour of an 8-hour day and you've got enough food to feed your family. Now you've got to work all day to feed your family. And normally, you know, barley was 3 quarts for a day's wages. But you got this great, great increase in the cost of food. If you're in those 7 churches in Asia, you experiencing anything like that? How much poverty was there in the church? Hebrews chapter 10, verse 34 said, "You took joyfully the spoiling of your goods." Acts chapter 8, they entered into the houses of where the saints were. Saul did that. And Jesus says, "Pray that your flight be not the winter time, nor on the Sabbath day." You head for the mountains, but you got hard times ahead. So here are these saints that are there, and the Lord says, guess what's going to happen? Gospel's going to go out to conquer the world, conquering and to overcome and to overcome, and there's going to be martyrdom, and you're going to be hungry. The Bible in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 talks about those in Macedonia, who were in poverty, and those in Achaia, talking about the church, who were in deep poverty. Achaia is just across the Aegean Sea from the 7 churches in Asia. They understood this. I'm going to show what's going to happen. You're going to go out conquering and to conquer, and there's going to be bloodshed. And there is going to be a scarcity of food, but don't touch the wine and the oil. Find that interesting. Who has the $14,000 bottles of wine? Talked to a guy this week. Said he went to a restaurant and said over on the back page, it had the list of all the drinks, and it had a bottle of wine back there that if you wanted to pay for it, was $14,000. I didn't make that number up. Rich folks have the wine and the oil. Poor folks don't. There's a difference in the cost of the staples of life and the luxuries of life. And you'd have to understand that. The problem is, they didn't have a farthing. They didn't have a denarius. Go out, and this is what's going to happen. I've got a list of several verses in there, 2 Corinthians chapter 12, and I've got chapters 8 and verse 2 about the poverty, that's on the screen, of the Christians who were suffering. You're in the 7 churches in Asia. It's tough. We've become Christian. We're going out to conquer the world, and guess what? We're losing. What message do you need to know when you're losing? What message do you need to know that'll help you? What do you need to know when there's adversity in your life? What do we say? God's on a throne. Did we not say that? Guess what Revelation 4 says? God's on a throne. And Jesus, the Lion of Judah, the Lion of Judah and the Lamb of God, He's deity. He's sitting at the right hand of God. You believe in God, believe also in me. Why those chapters even there? Because that's the things they need to be reminded of. Just like when we're in the hospital waiting room and the doctor comes out and said, "I've done everything I can do. It's in the hands of God." You believe in God, believe also in me. And so the preamble to the things which must shortly happen when these seals begin to be broken is God is on the throne. That expression It'll happen in God's good time. You ever use that? Ever hear that? I said that, and I don't mean this disrespectful at all because I love rednecks, but I said this to a redneck from the church in Belglade who is no longer part of that church over there. And he was here one Sunday, and I said, and just remember, God's on the throne. He said, and you remember, God knows what time it is. I sure like what he said about that. It'll happen in God's good time. Yeah, and God knows what's going on here. I love that. You believe in God, believe also in me. Wait a minute. Conquering and to conquer, martyrdom and scarcity of food for those who are poor. And so you're going to go out conquering. I've got a summary down at the end of that slide that's on the screen. The white horse ridden by Jesus went out conquering, overcoming, and to overcome. The red horse, God granted permission for martyrdom. And the third seal, the black horse, conquering those who went out conquering met with martyrdom and scarcities. Then the fourth seal is open. Wow, what's going to happen now? The fourth seal is open, and I heard the voice of the fourth living creature say, come and see. So I looked, and I saw a pale horse. What's pale mean to you? Sickly, is that what you said? The New American Standard says an ashen horse. The Greek word indicates a greenish-yellow horse, a sick horse. I saw a sick horse riding out, and the rider on it, instead of being a man, he who sat on the throne, sitting on top of that, that horse is death. Now, you read this, you don't have any problem with it until you try to take everything in the book literally. I can read that to you, and you've got it. Draw me a picture of what it looked like. You don't. You don't, it's not a literal book. And following him close was Hades. By the way, I just put a note on the screen there that says he wasn't on the horse, he was above the horse. I have no idea what that is other than, isn't that fascinating? Brother Franklin Camp said, when you see something that's a little bit weird, you need to remember it. There may be a sermon in there somewhere. I don't know why I don't mean he's way up here. He's not in the saddle. Does your horse have a saddle on it, by the way? Every one of these guys riding on the horse, did they have saddles on them? They did. Do you draw pictures when you read this or not? You know, what about the American Indians? What would they see? You know, what about the British with their saddles without a horn? You know, you understand what I'm talking about? It doesn't make any difference. We try to make something out of everything. And it's written in words that it fits in any culture. It fits in the first century culture. It fits in a culture in the Caribbeans and in the cultures in Africa. Everybody can understand this. You'll come up with whatever kind of horse you want to come up with. Okay? I mean, you know, it's not a literal horse, but riding on this horse is death. And coming after him, and I have no idea what that means. He followed him. Is he running along behind him? Are there two of them on the same horse? I don't know. John says, let me tell you what I saw. And this is what I saw, and I'm content to just let my imagination. If you read it fast, you don't have any problems, by the way, reading this. It's when John says, and I saw death on the throne, on the horse, and I saw Hades following. I know what Hades is, and they know what Hades is. It's the unseen world. It's the place where the rich man was when he was in the flames of fire, and it's also the place where the Spirit of Jesus was. Thou will not leave my soul in Hades, neither will thou suffer. It just means the word unseen. Has to do with death and things of that nature. Okay? Power is given to him. Power is given to kill 1/4 of the earth with the sword, with hunger, with death, and with the beast of the earth. You are joking. That bell just rang. I was going to get through chapter through the fifth seal, you know. He's not given over all the earth. Here is something that is localized in its very nature. Isn't that what it indicates? It's not the whole, it's not all of the earth, it's over 1/4 of the earth. Is that literally 25%? No, over 1/4 of the earth. And what is happening is the four judgments of God, the sword, hunger, death, and the beast of the earth. Look in Ezekiel chapter 5. This is really interesting because in the Old Testament, you continue to read about God's four judgments. And Josh will be teaching Ezekiel. I'm teaching Jeremiah right now, but you know, hang in there when you study Ezekiel. You'll really, really see some things in the book of Ezekiel, okay? Look in verse 17. So I will send against you famine, wild beast, they will bereave you, pestilence and blood shall pass among you. Does that sound sort of like what we're talking about? And I will bring the sword against you, I the Lord have spoken it. Look in verse 12. 1/3 of you shall die with pestilence, be consumed with the famine in your midst. 1/3 shall fall by the sword around you, and I will scatter another 1/3 of you to the wind, and I will draw out a sword among them. Then thus shall my anger be spent. You will, verse 15, become a reproach and a taunt, a lesson an astonishment to the nations that are all around you when I execute judgment among you in anger and fury and furious rebukes. I, the Lord, have spoken it. I'm looking for, it says, where my four judgments are. Where is that? Maybe 14:21. Look in 14:21. 14:21. For thus says the Lord of hosts, how much more shall it be when I send my four severe judgments on Jerusalem? God had prophesied in the Old Testament, we'll take up here next week, that the time would come in which his anger would be so great that he would send judgment against Jerusalem. Four judgments from God. Yes. The sword, famine or pestilence, bloodshed, and in Revelation, and death. I will kill you. God had prophesied in the days of Ezekiel, the judgment of God is coming, and those early saints were seeing that happen. Go to the very last slide, whoever's back there. Is that you? Keep going. Just flash on down to the very last slide. Chapter 6. I don't have one after that. Okay. Yeah, there it is right there. Okay. Next week. That's where I wanted to get. I wanted to get here. Move that next week back to the slide that we're on. Be back here next Sunday morning. We'll talk about this.